Please welcome 2010-2011 Council of State Archivist President Barbara Teague of the Kentucky Department for Libraries and Archives.
Thank you, everyone, for coming, and thank you very much for staying for our closing plenary session. I don't think any of my friends stayed, so I really appreciate you all. Oh, there's a few. Thank you. The Council of State Archivists is pleased to have had the opportunity to meet with its two sister organizations, NAGARA and SAA, in our nation's capital, and we look forward to further communication, collaboration, and possible federation in the future. I'm also pleased to have a few moments to share information with you about some of COSA's planned activities and goals for the coming year. COSA is implementing a new strategic plan, part of which concentrates on providing continuing support for the central state and territorial archives in each state or territory, and for the state historical records advisory boards. In these extraordinary and very trying budget times, it is increasingly important that the central role of the state archives in documenting government, preserving history, and ensuring transparency continues and is strengthened. As you may have heard during this meeting, COSA is also in the middle of a $2.6 million grant from FEMA. It's called IPER, for the Intergovernmental Preparedness for Essential Records. Through this grant, an instructional team from your state archives, your information technology agency, and your emergency management agency will provide free emergency preparedness training for state and local government officials. If you want to know more information or if you would like training, please contact the state archives in your state or see our COSA IPER website. As you may have imagined, COSA will continue to concentrate our advocacy efforts on securing passage of PAR, the Preserving the American Historical Record Act, and for funding and reauthorization of the National Historical Publications and Records Commission. I would like to remind everyone here, and I would like for you to remind your colleagues and your friends of the power of one. You all have one of these, right? Each of us can contribute, and each of us must act to bring increased funding to archives and records programs. It is our responsibility to do this now, to do it monthly, weekly, daily. When you get an email action alert, when you check the PAR website, when a colleague asks you to take action to help with PAR, please take a few moments to do so. This takes 5 minutes to write a letter, if you copy one of ours, 1 minute to make a phone call to a congressional office. It really doesn't take much time. 32 co-sponsors signed on to PAR in the House in 2009, and 64 co-sponsors signed on in 2010. Additionally, some powerful members of the Senate sponsored to introduce the legislation in the Senate, and we have many co-sponsors there as well. This is really great progress, and we're moving toward our goal. Let's continue to build on this work and succeed in passing PAR. Working together, we can secure passage of PAR for the preservation of and access to the American historical record. COSA presented the inaugural Kathleen D. Rowe Advocacy for Archives Award this year. I hope you were able to see that. We gave it... And that was a surprise to Kathleen, too, by the way. We presented it to two lobbyists who have helped provide advice, help, and guidance to the PAR Task Force and to our associations, and particularly who came and helped us when we testified for NHPRC in June. And we learned to navigate the ways of federal legislation from these pro bono lobbyists. Their names are Cynthia Woodside, who's from the New York State Department of Education, and Michael Gill from the firm Kroll & Mooring. They agree that we've made great progress, and they encourage us to keep on our work to pass PAR. I would ask that each of you take Kathleen Rowe's steadfast work on PAR as an example, and realize that each phone call, each email, each fax, each person you talk with in the elevator or in the hallway, anything you can do with Congress can and will make a difference as we exercise the profound power of one citizen to create change. I'm also very interested in and excited by SAA outgoing President Peter Gottlieb's proposal for investigating the formation of an American Archives Federation. I hope our colleagues in COSA will look forward to collaborating with NAGARA, SAA, and was it 80 other organizational groups to examine and discuss this idea over the next several years. Thanks so much for your kind attention to this overview of COSA's work. If you take home one thing that I said today, I'm sure you'll remember everything, but if you just have one thing, please remember we really need your help in passing PAR, and that your member of Congress or senator actually does want to hear from you. Now I'm pleased to introduce the president of NAGARA, the National Association of Government Archives and Records Administrators, and the city clerk of Nashua, New Hampshire, Paul Bergeron.
Thank you, Barbara. One of the first things I want to talk about is how membership in NAGARA is established and or determined. Certainly, we do have a number of individual membership opportunities, but most of our members come to the association through the membership of their institutions. For example, National Archives is a member of the organization, therefore, their 2,500 employees also are, which sometimes comes as a surprise to the members of, or the employees of the National Archives. Similarly, about 45 of the state archives belong to our association, and all the employees of those organizations also belong to NAGARA. We made a decision several years ago to go away from print media and to go more into the electronic age and deliver our newsletters and our reports and our white papers via email so that we could reach out to these members. It didn't make a lot of sense for us to send half a dozen publications of Clearinghouse to the National Archives office if the 2,500 employees of NARA weren't seeing what we were doing. So therefore, I would encourage any of you that belong to institutions that are members of NAGARA to go to our website. First of all, anybody can sign up for our emails, though we do sometimes have selective email blasts to members only. We also have a members-only page, which only members will be able to access, which includes a lot of our minutes and bylaws and publications for at least a period of 12 months. And if you belong to a member institution, please sign up to try and receive those emails. We don't burden you with a lot of emails. We try to keep it to two a month, and hopefully by doing so, they stay meaningful. I wanted to highlight three initiatives which I think might be of interest to this audience because it should appeal to members as well as non-members, and it's something that all of you can take advantage of or contribute to for the benefit of those that are in our profession. The first one of those is our online document library. If I could have the next slide, please. The online document library evolved out of the recommendations of COSA's Closest to Home project, which I had the pleasure of serving on over a number of years. It's just being wrapped up this year or several months ago. One of those recommendations talked about the need to develop a website focal point for interest and activity because so many associations, so many state archives, so many organizations were building their own websites to post documents that might be useful to those that are in our profession. COSA did not have the ability or the time or the funds to follow through on all the recommendations that were issued in the Closest to Home report. So NAGARA took responsibility for establishing this online document library. Next slide, please. The recommendation that we were trying to look at and help develop was that which you saw in the previous slide, that the project survey revealed there is much already in existence that is unknown or underutilized. As a result, we created this website called NAGARAResources.org. Next slide, please. The site is available to anyone, anybody in our community, anybody in the world. And in fact, about 5% of the participation on this website is coming from overseas now. It's not just coming from people here in the United States. You have the ability to go to that website and download any publication that's been loaded onto it. You don't have to sign on. You don't have to provide your email address. You can just go and obtain the site and the information. If you want to upload, obviously we do want you to register because we don't want videos being uploaded to this. We have to check your credentials. But usually within 24 to 48 hours, we'll give you approval to upload documents. Obviously, we ask that these be documents that are in the public domain, or if they're copyrighted, that you give NAGARA the ability or the authority to use those documents on the website. Currently, there are about 300 publications available in the library. Our goal over the next year is to increase that to 500. And we think this could be a wonderful tool for people in our profession to share documents, reports, and so on that might be helpful to others in our profession. Next slide, please. The other initiative we have going on is called the Local Government Archives and Records Administration Certificate. This emerged from discussions from the Records Management Committee of the International Institute of Municipal Clerks, or IIMC. The Records Management Committee for IIMC was trying to find some way to, one, encourage more records management sessions in conference programs, and two, to recognize local officials who are making an effort to acquire this type of knowledge. Next slide, please. One of the things that we did find very interesting, this was rolled out a little over a year ago, is that state archives and regional archival associations have found it much easier to obtain records management and archive programming in other local government association conference programs by mentioning the certificate. If they say, for example, let us run a morning workshop on basic archives, and you can earn 4 hours towards the 40 needed for the local government records and archives certificate. Next year, you approach them again and say, we'd like to do a four-hour session on basic records management, and then on digitizing programs and email management and so on and so forth. And we're finding that a lot of the clerks' associations and municipal associations are starting to buy into this. The Municipal Clerks Association has gone so far as to develop a rotating schedule where now every year in their national conference, they're providing 4 to 6 sessions that fall into our core competency areas and are rotating them so that after a period of 3 or 4 years, their members can earn this certificate. Now, it's a certificate. It's not certification. We understand we're talking about people who probably are in their jobs with very little to no training at all in archives and records management administration. We're giving an opportunity to expose them to the field, and hopefully once they have that base of knowledge, they'll choose to pursue perhaps a CA or CRM designation. And there are clerks that have those designations. So I think that's very, very helpful, too. And we've also found that some of the clerks and some of the local government people are using that as leverage to attend meetings, whether meetings of SAA or NAGARA or even regional archives associations. They're saying, I'm working toward this local government records certificate. I've got 20 hours, and I only need 20 more. If you let me attend this conference, I can earn another 10. So it does offer a lot of opportunities. The programs do not have to be sponsored by NAGARA. They can be sponsored by any professional trade association, by your state archives, by FEMA, by NARA, by any reputable professional association or government institution or agency. It's not a moneymaker. NAGARA will charge $10 to review the paperwork and mail them their certificate if they qualify. So I think it's a great program, and I would encourage you back in your regional associations to use it as leverage to get programming into other association activities. Next slide, please. And those are just some of the requirements of the certificate. I do have copies of the brochures out in the back if anyone is interested in picking those up. If you have any questions, just send us an email. I'll be happy to answer them. And the next slide. The third program we have underway now, is a call for authors. We applied in conjunction with IIMC for an NHPRC grant to republish some bulletins that NAGARA and the International Institute of Municipal Clerks published during the 1990s, ending in the year 2000. There were approximately 12 titles ranging in 4 to 24 pages in length. They were seriously outdated, and there was also a need to add some titles in e-records, email, and other types of management of digital projects. NHPRC has awarded us a grant to move forward on that. We need authors now. Our deadline to select and move forward with our authors, get them under contract, is September 15th. You don't have to be a member of NAGARA or IIMC to do this. Next slide, please. These are just some of the requirements that we're asking that you have if you want to do it. We're offering a very modest stipend of $1,000. The publications are to be 20 to 24 pages in length. Again, we have a call for authors handout in the back. It lists all the titles. If you think you might have an interest in authoring one of these publications, we encourage you to submit a letter of interest to us so that we can put you on our list and ask the editor to consider your request to participate. If you don't want to get involved as an author, then we would encourage you to participate as a reviewer. NHPRC does expect us to offer or provide $20,000 worth of in-kind contributions. Anytime you provide to us as a reviewer of one or more publications, will allow us to charge that up as an in-kind contribution. So I think it's a very important series, and we look forward to that publication as well. So now, if we could move to the next slide, I'm going to share the podium with Barbara, because our annual conference next year, the Nagara-COSA Joint Annual Meeting, is going to be in Nashville, and we'd like to provide you a little bit of information about Nashville and about the conference itself.
We're hoping that everyone from Nagara and COSA will meet with us in Nashville, and SAA members are welcome as well, because we're going to have fun in Nashville in addition to doing lots of work. Nashville is a city of music, parks, and history, so naturally there are plenty of things to see and to do. Visitors can explore the roots of Nashville's music scene. There are museums, historic sites, botanical gardens, science centers, and Kentucky's right across the border. So come see us, too. We want to share a few of the things about Nashville with you. The number 10 thing to see in Nashville is the Hermitage. The Hermitage was the home of Andrew Jackson, the 7th President of the United States, and the person that we heard about who'd gotten the letter from Junius Brutus Booth the other day. So that's pretty interesting. The curator from the Hermitage was on that History Detectives video. It's actually the 4th most visited presidential residence in the country after the White House, Mount Vernon, and Monticello. The number 9 thing to see in Nashville is the District, which has good music, shops, restaurants, and a vibrant club scene for those of you who can stay up past 10.
Barbara, why don't you stay right there so one of us doesn't fall off the stage, which I have seen happen before. Number 8. Nashville's a sports town. It's home to a number of minor and major league sports franchises, including the National Football League's Tennessee Titans, the National Hockey League's Nashville Predators, and the Milwaukee Brewers' AAA affiliate, the Nashville Sounds. So those of you that are baseball fans, we can certainly take in a AAA game next year. Number 7, Nashville is Riverfront Park and Steamboats. Riverfront Park serves as Nashville's favorite outdoor venue for concerts, festivals, and other special events. Historic Fort Nashboro, an authentic replica of the original 1780 settlement, is located on the grounds of the park. Nashville is also home to the 300-foot paddle wheel General Jackson Riverboat, one of the largest showboats in the country. Number 6, Nashville is the Grassmere Zoo. Since it first opened in 1990, Nashville Zoo has collected an impressive variety of animals from around the world. The zoo also boasts a 66,000-square-foot playground that includes a 30-foot treehouse, tunnels, slides, a waterfall, and water play areas. Number 5, Nashville is a great place for family and kids, and there are a lot more activities available for family members who want to get out and about Nashville. The state-of-the-art science center, botanical gardens, swim parks, golf courses, and the Frist Center for the Visual Arts, which features more than 30 hands-on stations where educators will help your child paint, sculpt, or learn printmaking.
And the number 4 reason is plantations, mansions, museums, and the arts. Constructed in 1897 for the city's centennial exposition, the Parthenon in Central Park is a full-size replica of the Athens original. I mean, it actually is. And it functions as the city's arts museum. Bellmead Plantation is on 30 acres of land just south of Nashville. It has 8 buildings, including the original dwelling, which dates from 1790. Also on this slide, there's a picture of the Ryman Auditorium, which is the original Grand Ole Opry, and the Frist Center that Paul mentioned. Number 3, of course, is music. Nashville is the center of the universe for honky-tonk and country music fans, and none of these is more legendary than the Grand Ole Opry, country music's heaven on earth. Some country music stars visit the museum. See some country music stars visit the museum or take a behind-the-scenes tour. And the number two reason is also more country music, the Country Music Hall of Fame. There you can examine the roots of country music and see how it all began. See where greats like Dolly Parton and Elvis Presley got their start, the famed RCA Studio B. The permanent exhibit has the history of country music from the beginning, and including the Hall of Fame Rotunda. Special exhibits focus on different people, styles, or periods of history. There are children's activities, including, this must be really good, an exhibit that lets you design your own country star outfit.
And number one. Number one reason for coming to Nashville. And stay still. In July 2011, of course, is the joint annual meeting of the National Association of Government Archives and Records Administrators and the Council of State Archivists. Our program and local arrangements committees are developing a calendar full of interesting and challenging sessions, exciting tours, and insightful speakers. Nashville will be our home for the 2011 annual meeting, and I would ask that you just visit the home pages within the next week or so of both COSA and NAGARA to get more information about our call for session proposals. Not near as complex as it is for SAA. We keep it very simple. Galen Wilson, who's the chair of our program committee, has already said, all I want is an email. So we're going to make this very simple for you. And now I'd like to give you a little video representation of some of what we'll talk to you about, and so you can get a feel for what Nashville is all about. Okay, thank you. Mark your calendar, save the dates, and we'll see you in Nashville. Okay.
Well, we short people always have to adjust the microphone. Good afternoon. What a pleasure for me to be speaking with you today. Wow, which is the theme word for this year. Wow, I'm amazed at the number of folks here at 4:15, right on the dot on our schedule, on Saturday afternoon. That's dedication. Or you really wanted to see a Nationals game. I grew up a Red Sox fan, so I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be the SAA president. While this is certainly not an honorary position, given the amount of work involved, it is a great honor. Thank you so much. What a great group SAA is. I think everyone should have just a round of applause for yourself. I joined SAA 26 years ago this month, as it turns out. And I have to send those dues in, actually. So for the rest of you who joined in August because of a meeting coming up, send in your dues. So I was around for the 50th anniversary meeting in New York in 1986, but it didn't have much meaning for me as an SAA newbie. Funny how a quarter of a century changes that perspective. And for those of you who are new to SAA, just think what will happen in 25 years for you. Some of my dearest friends are part of the SAA family, and I truly do look forward to coming here every year. As a faculty member in a School of Information and Library Science, I am and have been a member of several professional organizations, including the American Library Association, ARMA, the Association of Computing Machinery, ACM, Special Libraries Association, American Society for Information Science and Technology, and the Association for Library and Information Science Educators, and a few others. Through all these years, see all those dues I paid? See that little dues increase? It's nothing. Through all these years, I have always considered SAA my home organization. And believe it or not, I have only missed one annual meeting. We should have a lottery or a raffle for people to figure out which one that was since I joined in 1984. So my first meeting was in Chicago. Next year, with our 75th anniversary, we're going back to Chicago, so it's very special for me. So it is indeed an honor and a thrill to be SAA president during our Diamond Anniversary. 1936 to 2011, SAA then, now, wow. Stay tuned for lots of exciting events this year. And in fact, if you'll indulge me for just 1 minute. Okay, so I just got this newfangled phone just a couple of months ago, but it has this 8-megapixel camera on it. And let's see if it actually, oh, look at that now. Let's see if I can do this. Smile. Did it flash? Ah, okay. Now, let's wave. Oh, this is good. All right. Keep waving. Keep waving. Because now we can do a little bit of a video. Okay, funny face now, funny face. Do something silly. It's 4:15. All right. Okay. Now let's see. I could attach that to a Twitter message. And I could send that little video to YouTube, right? And now you can all be stars. Right? And more importantly, you have evidence to take home to your bosses when you can look this up on YouTube, who are funding your trips and that you really needed to be in attendance at 4:15 in the afternoon on Saturday afternoon and hence stay an extra night to see that Nationals game. You now have evidence. Okay, in all seriousness, the point of that little exercise, beyond capturing a few memories from the speaker's point of view, was to create some records that potentially an archivist will have to manage at some point in the future. Let's see, I made some still images, a little video of y'all waving, and I'm just tickle pink that I could actually figure out how to do that, and actually I did it. And being silly, and recorded, I could record my speaking. In fact, I could record my whole speech. I could also send the text of the speech from the phone. It's really not a phone anymore. In fact, that's its least good quality. If the SAA archives, we just discussed this in council, if the SAA archives or the UNC archives someday wants my personal papers, these items could be key pieces in documenting my life. Pretty amazing capturing all this and generating these records in a wide variety of digital formats representing an array of analog media, paper, sound recordings, still photography, video photography, with this little piece of technology that fits in my pocket. The times have changed. So I have these files, these media files in the Droid of audience participation as SAA 2010. This is only part of the story. I can send the still images to Flickr or attach them to a tweet on Twitter. I can send the video to YouTube. I can copy all of the files to my laptop and perhaps change them a bit. While today's wrinkle creams work wonders, there's nothing like a little photoshopping to make folks look their best. I can even insert a few folks to impress my dean with how many people were here. Right? Perhaps President Obama even dropped by to hear me. You just never know. I can make different versions of the images with a variety of resolutions or special effects, and I can send them to listservs and to individuals who can forward them on indefinitely. All from this phone. all in a matter of minutes. Then, now, wow. Indeed. We ain't seen nothing yet. And you know what? Managing and preserving files like those I just created, albeit hopefully, you know, perhaps a little more important files, is the job of our profession. While archivists will certainly have to partner with other professionals in this endeavor, management and preservation of digital content is the archivist's job, and moreover, it will become the primary archival job in the not-too-distant future. For some of us, it is already the primary activity of our professional lives. I know what you're thinking. Yeah, so what? She teaches about digital curation, so of course she is blathering on about digital stuff. Academics are always lecturing about something. It's what they do, so let's humor her and be polite. Management of digital content is not central to what I do, nor is it going to be. Well, here's the reality check, folks. While most repositories are filled with analog data storage devices, paper, film negatives, video and audio tape, these are all now either obsolete or dying technologies. While pressers, as Juan Williams so eloquently testified this morning, our collections are antiquarian. Today's young Thurgood Marshall is not writing home letters home to his mother. He's texting her. When did any of you last create a true manuscript for a significant work item? That is, when did you handwrite or even type on a typewriter? How many people have a typewriter? An office report or memo? That's because you like historical stuff. Or even a letter. When did you handwrite your last personal letter? I just had to move the contents of my office at UNC. This resulted in 37 large boxes of books and papers, plus some file cabinets filled with paper. Of all the paper in the office, I don't think over a file folder's worth was not computer generated. Right now, the only paper-based file I maintain is my planner in the to-do list. However, since I've gone to this newfangled thing, it's likely that the schedule will get on here pretty soon. I even send Christmas email letters now and not cards through snail mail. And I can do it like Christmas Eve. You know, I can be late. It's pretty good. And I certainly do not consider myself a technologist or a cutting-edge communicator. I only bought the smartphone about 2 months ago, well behind most of my colleagues and certainly most of my students. While this seems to have happened in a flash, we've been able to predict this reality for close to 60 years. Computers as we know them now were first built in the 1940s. In 1945, Vannevar Bush wrote As We May Think, where he introduced the Memex, a machine that would store, link, and retrieve a large body of information. As We May Think predicted, to some extent, many of today's technologies, including personal computers, the internet, the web, and online socially constructed data stores such as Wikipedia. So we've had at least a 65-year run-up to the realization of the largely digital society we have today. No wonder technology is first on the list of SAA strategic priorities. If an old fogey like myself, remember in the 60s that was anyone over 30, right? So, you know, being 31, I'm still in that category now, can create that many digital records in that many formats in a couple of minutes, just think what a young person can do. How many digital records do each of us create in our jobs every day? Now think about what steps we are taking to appraise, describe, and preserve those records. If you're anything like most of your peers, and remember, we're on the cutting edge because we know about appraising, describing, and preserving. Making sure that your computer or your server is backed up is all that you do along the lines of preservation. Very few of us follow record schedules with our digital assets, our own personal ones, unless we are records managers, perhaps. Even fewer add metadata to our files. You know, open the properties pull down in Word and some of the other software and add key terms and abstracts. Yep, we've had that capability for well over a decade, and I actually don't know that I've ever met anyone who's done that. What about migrating old files to new versions of software? We may feel above reproach here, but have you tried to open a file that's 10 years old? If so, could you open it? Did it look like the original? Was it an authentic version? Whose responsibility to move that digital object forward in time is it? In the last issue of American Archivist, Liesl Zack and Marcia Perry, the work they started as NHPRC electronic records research fellows at UNC in 2005, surveyed archivists and records managers at academic institutions across the U.S. 2005, they found that almost no colleges or universities had electronic records programs. Zack and Perry write in 2010, 65% of the original institutions that had reported in 2005 updated their data, and the results suggest relatively little change in the development of ERM programs over the past 4 years. Who should know more about digital preservation than archivists? Archivists are the professionals around the world to preserve paper-based and other analog records for the long term. We need to be the professionals to preserve digital content as well. In 2006, then-President, SAA President Richard Pierce Moses led an initiative to explore the new technology skills needed by the archival profession. That was 5 years ago, and technology has been on the SAA Council radar screen ever since. But Zack and Perry would indicate that perhaps not much has changed in the intervening years. Technology is one of the three SAA strategic priorities, along with increasing diversity and expanding outreach and advocacy for the profession. The challenge I am looking to explore and address this year as your president is how we get from knowing that archiving digital content is important to making this a reality for a wide spectrum of archivists in their everyday work life. Certainly we can point to NARA with the Electronic Records Archive and large scientific data stores, but the majority of archival institutions in the U.S., including many of the branches of NARA, as David Ferriero pointed out, are struggling with the concept, let alone the reality, of long-term digital preservation and access. While I may be a bit biased here, I would argue the path forward is through education, both graduate-level archival education and continuing education offered by SAA and a number of other providers. To this end, the SAA guidelines for a graduate program in archival studies are being revised to address the archival education challenges of the next decade, wherein programs will be educating students whose careers will extend to the year 2050. Sobering, isn't it? Also, Council has created, and I've appointed members to serve on the Digital Archiving Continuing Education Task Force, or DACE. This group will outline a curriculum for digital archiving and identify digital archiving education and identify the challenges associated with moving the profession forward through continuing education. So this is indeed a wonderful year ahead and a great time to be an archivist and a great time to be an SAA member. In the words of David Gracie, co-chair of the 75th Anniversary Task Force, into the breach. Thank you, and see you all in Chicago. And now I would like to introduce dear Dr. Gracie to come up and tell us a little bit about the 75th.
Good afternoon. Do you feel it? You are on the cusp of it. History, SAA history, and the history of archives, archivists, and archival enterprise in America throughout the coming year. Culminating in the 2011 Chicago meeting, we will be celebrating the 75th anniversary of our Society of American Archivists. SAA at 75. Then, now, wow! Look for a special issue of the American Archivist, history sessions during the annual meeting, oral history opportunities at the annual meeting, a timeline on the web, and, drumroll please, 75 trading cards that will refresh the history you have known, will bring you history you have not known, and will introduce you to new friends as you work skillful trades to build your own complete set. This celebration will happen only once. Don't miss it. SAA at 75, then, now, wow.
And to tell us a bit more about the program, Nancy McGovern and Richard Marciano.
Note to self, never follow David B. Grayson on the program, ever. As much fun as Nashville sounds, we're hoping that we'll see all of you in Chicago next year. It's the perfect place for 2011. We're very excited about the program. Richard will tell you a little bit about that. We're very happy to be appointed by Helen. And we wanted to share with you the members of the 2011 program committee. So if you have questions, you can seek them out. Not all of them are able to be here, but I'd ask those who are to raise your hand or flail about in some way. Okay, so we have Ken Thibodeau from NARA, Brenda Gunn from UT Austin, Rebecca Kim from LGBT Historical Society, Christella Garcia Spitz from UC San Diego, Jennifer Young from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, Kelly Eubank from the North Carolina Department of Cultural Resources, Jeff Pirtle from NBC Universal, Paige Smith, who, like many of us on the committee, are in transition, Francine Schneider from the Guggenheim, and Christy Peterson, who is on her way from Bates to Princeton. We hope to see you all next year.
Good afternoon. Just a quick follow-up. If you haven't done so yet, page 59 of your program has all the information you'll ever need and you ever wanted regarding the program. All the details are there. I just want to reiterate and highlight the significance of this 75th anniversary theme. As you've heard, drum roll and all, and we'll have a video shortly on beautiful Chicago. We invite you to submit creative proposals, keeping in mind this commemorative theme. It's, as the program indicates, an opportunity to take a good look around, be retrospective, introspective, futuristic, and bring it all together. So on behalf of all the committee members, as stewards of next year's program, feel free to call on us if you have any suggestions, questions, and we'll do our best to help put together a wonderful program next year. So see you in the loop.
Thank you for all being here in Washington, and we look forward to seeing you next year and Thank you particularly for staying until the bitter end and listening to all of us here. I think that's wonderful. I have one announcement from John Legolowick. The JAL Tours SAA baseball attendees may meet John Legolowick in the 24th Street entrance, lobby entrance, near Harry's Pub, beginning at 5 p.m. to get your tickets and Metro directions to the game. And I think we're adjourned. See you next year in Chicago.